Welcome to this week's episode of Roll the Credits as we dive into one of the best actresses of all time. Her movies bring a lot of great storylines and conversation starters as Tina and Ryan try to keep it together. In this week's episode of Roll the Credits, please enjoy.
Story that I have.
I guess you've been talking about it all before I clicked record, so let's see how funny it is.
I was just reminded of this by one of my friends, and she lost her virginity to this guy a few months ago, I would say. And so as a joke, some of her friends sent her flowers, and they said, "Happy deflowering, love vaginas" on on the note. And they showed up at her house, and my friend lives with her parents.
No.
And they showed up like midday, and her dad was like, "Oh hey, like these flowers came for you, like do you want me to see who they're from?" And she said, "Okay, sure." So the next text that she gets from him is a picture of the note that says "Happy deflowering, love vaginas."
Wait, are you in on this? People that sent the flowers?
No, this was not me. I did not do that. I kind of wish I had thought of doing that because that's fucking hilarious. But
no way.
Yes. So she responded to it and said, "Huh, that's weird. Like, so and so likes to send funny messages and send people flowers after she stays at their house," because her friend had just stayed at her parents' house with her that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Honestly, dude, you just should have said nothing. That was a terrible cover."
Yeah, that was not good.
Not good. But anyways, that was my kind of funny story that I
remember. That is funny. That's it's terrifying, realistically. But I guess,
oh my god, yeah.
I mean, she's older at this point, right, I would assume. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit different, what I would do.
You know, like 13 years old, that would be.
13? Who's having sex at 13?
Well, I don't know.
You didn't have sex at 13.
No, definitely not.
I did not have sex at 13. I was about 4 feet tall when I was 13 years old.
Honestly, same. Maybe we're the same height.
Well, you're still 4 feet now, so.
Right.
You're not wrong. This of course is Roll the Credits, guys, and we are here with another episode. Super exciting. As of course I'm sure you tuned in last week, we have one of the best actresses, I guess, if not the best actress potentially ever to live, definitely in our lifetime. Meryl Streep will be diving into in a little bit. Obviously I'm sure there's a ton of movies that we could have picked from. She was nominated for an Oscar 21 times, has won 3 Oscars as a leading woman. But we will get into all of that. I wanted to talk a little bit about, obviously, the current events of today's world in the coronavirus. Kind of crazy, huh? I mean, we've now seen me and your alma mater, Westchester, has shut down classes until March 30th and is then going to be going fully remote after that. There's been a few other schools, high schools, colleges around the area that are doing the same. Basketball tournaments are shutting down. Fans are being barred from sporting events. Certain areas of countries, Italy is fully, kind of locked into their own apartments. I've seen a part of New York being kind of quarantined. I was just curious.
The National Guard.
Yeah, and that brought the National Guard to that one part. What are your feelings and thoughts on it?
So these are my feelings and thoughts. Number
respectful.
One, yes, I'm going to. I am a very respectful person. Anyways, first of all, I think people need to be vigilant about it and proactive. I understand that you and I are likely not in the category of if we get it, we will die. I don't have, a compromised immune system. I'm not sure about yours. But I think it's still important that people like you and me abide by, you know, maybe not flying, that sort of thing, to protect others. I don't know. I think this is sort of a place where we take a step back and think, well, what's best for the greater good of the people? I certainly don't want to be responsible for spreading the coronavirus and like potentially killing somebody, whether I know it or not, because it spread through me and it got to them or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of my overarching thought. I think maybe we should just shut everything down for 2 weeks.
Never going to happen.
No, I know.
And I mean, it is, it's strange because, I mean, it's as big of an epidemic as we've seen in our lifetime. Definitely, at least that I can remember. I mean, you are seeing literally countries being barred, as we talked about. A lot of people that have the ability to work from home are now being kind of sent to work from home for the next couple of weeks. Schools being shut down, classes being suspended, stores, you know, selling out of toilet paper and hand sanitizer and soaps.
Just at the grocery store looking for Clorox wipes or like Lysol wipes because I need them, not because of the coronavirus. Just generally need some cleaning supplies. Nothing.
Yeah, it's I mean, I don't know. I agree. We're not obviously in the danger zone, you know, and there are obviously people that are, you know, people are, you know, falling ill and passing away. But a lot of the people that you see, as you mentioned, are people with compromised immune systems or people that are over the age of 65. But I guess if there's anything that we can do as human beings to just stop the spread as much as possible, I guess that, I mean, that's clearly what we're going to do as a nation. I don't see them, you know, completely shutting everything down and kind of, you know, barring the whole U.S. Right. But
yeah, I think it's already going to tank. So,
yeah. And I think the next couple of days and weeks, more and more things will be canceled. You know, parades have been canceled for St. Patrick's Day, this upcoming weekend, big gatherings have been canceled. So I think we'll probably trend in that direction. I don't know how serious or severe it will get. Hopefully, the World Health Organization can put plans in place that, you know, can stop it and nip it in the bud as soon as possible. You know, it hasn't personally affected me yet or anybody that is in my circle or has, you know, kind of, you know, so I haven't seen the repercussions firsthand, but yeah, you obviously see the numbers and the staggering deaths and the amount of people infected. So I guess, as you mentioned, just I guess stay as clean as you can. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. But, you know, I'm not personally nervous or scared. I think, you know, if we were to get it, it would act as though we just had the flu, which sucks for a week to 10 days.
Yeah, no one wants the flu.
We're not going to talk any more about coronavirus because I have heard enough about the pandemic epidemic. So no more talk of the coronavirus.
I just have one question. Did they cancel Air and Express?
I don't think so. I saw the Boston parade was canceled. And then I'm going to Scranton this upcoming weekend for their parade. And they released a statement saying that it is going to be on as scheduled. So I haven't seen anything about Philadelphia's Air and Express yet.
Interesting. All right.
But I think we've talked about it throughout the week. So in the last episode, if you haven't tuned in yet, we had some really good conversation, as we dove into Emma Stone's movies. But before that, I divulged a big crush that I had on.
Oh, yeah, what's the Ellie update? Ellie Schnitt.
The Ellie Schnitt update is nothing has happened. Okay. I have not reached out, and she obviously has
not reached out to you.
Reached out to me.
Oh, damn.
But there's been a few friends that have texted me and said, hey, I want to help this happen because they want to be friends with her, not because they want to see me happy in a relationship, because that would be, you know, nice as friends if people wanted that. But
that's fair. I kind of want to be her friend too. So.
Yeah, people want to be her friend. So sooner, you know, soon, once the right opportunity presents itself, I am hoping to have an update here of, hey, I DM'd her. This is what it said. She did or didn't answer. She did or didn't see it. But as of right now, the feelings are still there. You know, there's a, you know, the crush is still there. She's put up a few photos since the last time we recorded. Photos and Insta stories since the last time we recorded. And, you know, nothing's changed. Nothing's wavered on how I feel. You know, and I've been following her along. I also watched The Bachelor. So we're getting to the finale here as we are recording. And I've been following along with her. And, you know, maybe we can entrant in our own love story.
Maybe
in a public podcast type of way, a podcast crossover, roll the schnit talking. So I'm not going to say the terror because that would be terrible, but you know, just something that I had thought about. That's all I got.
All right.
I have no other update for you on that.
Have you watched Love is Blind?
Yes, I did. I watched the entire season as well as the reunion.
Okay, so I'm not through it yet, so don't tell me anything. But
it's so cringy.
They
so
are
so cringy.
Oh my god, there's one, they're so cringy. Two, they have to be, I don't know, like maybe like clinically insane, but I don't know. They're just
reality stars, I think, at the end of the day. But
yeah,
that was one of the more cringe words. I don't really, I have one reality show that I like, The Challenge on MTV, but that I watched because it was getting so much attention. And it was like, I couldn't look away. It was kind of like a dog shitting or a car accident. And you're like, all right, you should look away, but you really can't because it is so, there's moments where like you're hiding your face and shielding. Yeah. And you're like, what are these fools like doing?
Jessica sucks.
Jessica does suck. How far are you into it?
I think on like the fourth episode, maybe. So I'm pretty new into it. It's my house show with my roommates. So we kind of have to all be together.
Are they out of the pods yet?
I'm sorry?
Are they out of the pods yet?
Not yet. They're just meeting each other for the first time. Most of them are.
Like face to face.
Yeah, face to face.
So you're kind of it gets way worse.
Oh, I know.
Jessica gets way worse. Oh,
I can't wait.
But she's the worst throughout the entire thing.
Mark deserves so much better than her. But
he's also such a fucking idiot.
I know.
It's this battle between, you see it all the time, and I saw it last night when we were watching The Bachelor. It's this stereotypical problem that a guy has, is like you make yourself so available that their interest just isn't as high as if somebody that had strong, it was the same thing. You know, there's the guy in Love is Blind, Barnett, was, you know, teeter-tottering between three different girls, and Jessica was head over heels. And then Mark has made himself nothing but available. And, you know, it's like, I don't really know how I feel about Mark. And you flip it as well. In The Bachelor, you know, there's this one girl that Peter is super in love with, but she doesn't know how she feels and she wants to walk away. And then there's this other girl who's head over heels in love with him. And he's kind of taking it for granted. And it's a situation that almost every guy has been in. They get it wrong almost every single time, myself included. So it's funny to watch in real time, as produced and dramatic as reality television can be. It was funny to see both of those situations, vice versa. But, you know, it's a situation that we always find ourselves in. You can't tell me that's not true from a girl's perspective. I can't tell you it's not true from a guy's perspective, because it is.
It is.
It's the way the brain works. It's fucking mental, but I mean, it is what it is at that point. I had a conversation, this is not suitable for parents or children, but I had a conversation with one of my friends the other day or last week or something, and we were somehow sex came up in the conversation, and she had said, so this is from a girl's perspective, that women can't be bad at sex. And I disagreed completely. We had a conversation, we went back and forth, and I think we agreed just to disagree. And it's difficult, you know, to get a girl's perspective of it, but I was curious to see what you thought, if a woman can be bad at sex. Because the thing is guys can always take the rap for being – there's multiple ways that guys can be bad at sex.
Right. It was,
you know, too quick, too little, too, you know, whatever. In the day, there's a lot of ways where – you know, you could clearly point the finger, be like, all right, he's not great in bed. But I was like, no, women can absolutely take the rap and the blame as well.
I've never thought about that, but hearing your friend say that, I think she kind of might be right.
That's such a double standard.
Okay, but think about all the other double standards in the entire world that women have. All of them. We have all of them except for that.
No, you can't just say that. You can't just take that just because you have all the other ones. That's not fair. The thing is if we have to take the rap for it a lot of the times, I feel like there's absolutely women out there that aren't good in bed. I try to point out more. And I think that I do think it varies as well, because I do believe that a sexual experience for the first time in a drunken environment is a lot different than a sexual experience with somebody that you have been hooking up with multiple times or dating or whatever the case may be. And those are obviously different. Communication thing
yeah,
obviously happens to make it better for both people.
And I would hope. Like you're saying, communication, and also just like without actually speaking, getting to know the other person better.
Yeah, no, for sure.
No, I don't know.
We've all been there in the situation, but I stand to my point. You can have a bad experience in a one-night stand. You can have a bad experience.
No, you're right. You're right. But I kind of think, I don't know.
You just want us to take the fall for it for no reason?
No. Like, I genuinely kind of think that she might be right. I would need to think about this a little bit more and weigh out why I feel that way. But, like, I see it. And okay. I don't think she's necessarily wrong.
All right. Well, take your time. We'll just sit here in silence until you come to a final answer. No, I just thought that was funny. It's now that we have this podcast and now that we do this, there's certain conversations I have or things that happen throughout the week or weeks before we record. And I'm like, oh, I want to take a note of that to bring that up because it's interesting to get your opinion, obviously. But then for any listeners that tune in and are, you know, have an opinion on it. You get texts throughout the week, I'm sure, as you know, I do through my friends, I'm sure you do as well. And they're like, oh no, I believe in this, or I agree with so-and-so. So it's always funny now that I take notes of ridiculous conversations that I have throughout the week.
All right.
I saw you a couple days ago.
Well, yeah, I did see you too.
I was hungover.
Yeah.
You put a photo up on the roll of credits.
I did.
Instagram. And my brother showed my parents.
Oh, no. That's really funny. Good job, Colin.
They know by now.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not like it was a bad photo. It was just, you know, it alluded to the fact that Sundays are hard for Colin.
They haven't been in a while. I've been pretty – Sundays haven't been terrible in a long time. That was the first weekend in a while I'd gone out both nights and – it was just a long weekend.
Looked pretty tired.
Okay, we get it. You put the photo up. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Why are you saying it like that?
There's a few words that I say people think that are a little strange. I say raccoon, I say photo, and I say buffet. So,
what about the character on Friends? How do you say her name? Phoebe?
Phoebe Buffet.
Okay.
Or Regina Phalange. But no, when you're going to a breakfast buffet or you're sitting down. You're sitting down with a raccoon taking a photo. Okay, so before we lose all listeners that we have, this is Roll the Credits. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Of course, I'm Ryan and that is Tina. Episode 7 now. We are really, really obviously enjoying what we're doing here. Conversations are starting to really continue and heat up and flow. And we got to some deeper conversation last week. And we're, you know, obviously excited to see where this week takes us with one of the best actresses on the planet, Meryl Streep. I don't know about you, Tina, but I obviously everyone knows Meryl Streep in the world, but I hadn't actually seen a lot of her movies that she was the star in. Maybe just because some of her genres are a little bit out there for me. You know, she's also, you know, some of her best work was, you know, before both of our times. Right. And I don't tend to go, you know, back that far. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't take away the fact that she does play some great characters throughout her career. Like I said, nominated for an Oscar 21 times, 3-time winner. This is Roll the Credits, Meryl Streep. And I guess I'll go first. I think you went first last time. And I picked a winner, Tina. I'll tell you what.
Did you?
It was a fucking good movie that I watched.
Oh man, is it going to be a higher rating than Black Swan?
I don't know. I guess you'll have to wait.
I guess I'll have to wait and find out.
So. All right, guys. We'll see you next week on Roll the Credits. No, I'm kidding. So yes, it was really, really good. So I watched one of her more recent films from 2017, The Post.
Ooh.
So this
Tom
was,
Hanks is in that, right?
Tom Hanks is in that. Obviously, one of the best actors of our generation as well. It is a very good cast, loosely based upon true events, which I think always makes the movie a little bit better as well. And they have a cast, Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad is in the movie. He plays a pretty big part in it. Alison Brie plays the daughter of Meryl Streep. And there's a few other actors that you would definitely recognize from various roles and you know, pretty strong careers as well. It was nominated for a 2017 Best Picture. So I think this might be one of I think Black Swan was also had some Oscar nominations, but this was nominated for a Best Picture. It did not win. Meryl Streep was also nominated for Best Actress or Oscar for her performance in a leading role in this performance, but she did not win either. But still, a very well-accredited movie. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 7.2 on IMDb. So to go through it, you know, it is pretty, I don't want to say common U.S. history, but obviously one of the biggest scandals in the U.S. that we've seen between the press and the presidency. So obviously this was during Nixon's reign as president. Mm-hmm. Basically what had happened was there was people that had leaked information to the New York Times from all the way from the 50s through the early 70s. So spanning across four different presidents. And this huge 7,000-page report was leaked to the New York Times. They had about 3 months to take it apart and write multiple stories, and it got released without anybody knowing that it was going to be released. And so this movie kept it under wraps. Obviously, there was somebody, his name was Dan, who stole the files and, you know, kind of put it all together and released it. So basically what the articles had said was that during the Vietnam War, all of these presidents knew that we had there was no reason for us to be in the war. And we were sending out thousands and thousands and thousands of 18-year-old boys to basically be killed in a war that we had no business winning and no business being in anymore. And all of the presidents had lied to the general public saying we were going to win this war. Everything was improving year after year, term after term, president after president. And it just happened to be that was not true. And these internal staff and presidencies kind of knew what was going on. And again, still sending out all these, you know, young boys to be killed realistically, as obviously we had lost so many people in that war. And basically what it had come down to was it was 20% to kind of control the communists in the Vietnam War, 10% to appease South Japan or, you know, kind of the South Vietnam area. And then 70% basically came down to the ego of not being able to handle an American defeat in a war. None of the presidents wanted the defeat of the first American defeat in a major war to be on their record. So they continued to shove all this stuff under the rug, continued to lie to the general public, continued to fix elections to people that, you know, wanted this war to continue. So all of these articles came out in this report. And what had happened was, this report is from the New York Times, and then Nixon sues them. So the New York Times are suspended from printing any more about this report. And the whole movie kind of spans within like a 5 or 6 day period after they kind of show you all the characters. So Tom Hanks, his name is Ben Bradley in the movie, and he's the news editor-in-chief of the Washington Post. So this entire movie is based around the Washington Post, in which Meryl Streep runs the Washington Post. Her name is Kay Graham. She doesn't really have business being in charge of it. It is because her husband, who owned the newspaper, committed suicide all these years ago.
Oh, wow.
So after the husband committed suicide, it was obviously just given to her. She has a board of directors of men that she trusts. She's the only woman that is on the board. And obviously she has the final say in everything that happens with the Washington Post, because it dates back to her father and grandfather who owned the newspaper. She's, in the beginning of the movie, she's very timid. So she's nervous to speak up in front of these men. There's people on the board that clearly don't think she should be in charge. There's people on the board that really don't take anything into consideration that she might, you know, kind of say. So she has this one advisor, his name is Fritz, who she really trusts. So mm-hmm. She sits down and they show them in the beginning of the movie going through all these numbers. And so she's taking the Washington Post public. So they're going through how many shares they're giving up, you know, what each share price is going to be, how much money they're valuing the company at, all of that. And so she gets this big board meeting and she has all the answers written down on the piece of paper. And there's like 3 or 4 seconds that after people are asking the exact questions that she knew that they were going to ask, and she just freezes and can't say the answer. And, you know, Fritz ends up speaking up, or one of the advisors ends up speaking up. So she's a very, very timid, you know, almost like easily kind of being able to be pushed over by all these men in her board who were appointed by her late husband or by Fritz after, you know, kind of speaking together.
And when was this taking place? I'm sorry.
1972, I believe. So it's early 70s, because Nixon was impeached in 74.
Right.
So then Alison Brie is a part of the movie, who again is another, you know, big actress. She plays Meryl Streep's daughter. So she doesn't have too big of a role in the movie, but she is there in an important scene that kind of allows Kay to step up, which I'll get to in a little bit, to step up and kind of have the gall to stand up to these men on her advisory board. And Bob Odenkirk, who is known from Better Call Saul, who is known from Breaking Bad and the various other movies and TV shows. He's one of the, you know, one of the best out there. He plays one of the lead reporters for Tom Hanks's character, Ben Bradley. Okay. So Ben is a very loud man, a very outspoken person. He believes in the freedom of press. He believes in the First Amendment, and he believes in the right to be able to publish these documents. So obviously he's very infuriated that the New York Times has this report and the Washington Post does not. And then when the New York Times gets suspended, he sees a silver line to be like, we got to find this fucking report and we need to publish it. And we need to do our duty to, you know, to the people of this great nation. So he sends Bob Odenkirk's character out. His name is Ben Bagdian or Bagcockthian or something. Sorry. So his name is Ben. We'll just say it's like Ben Bagdian. And he sends him out to try to find the source. So there's only two copies of this entire report. It's 7,000 pages. Obviously, that takes months and months of time to copy and get all set up. And he tracks down a former employee that he had a hunch had this report. And so he tracks it down. He gets 4,000 of the 7,000 pages, and he brings it back to Ben Bagley. And Ben takes his six best reporters, brings him to his home, and says, let's fucking figure this out. And he wants to basically read through 4,000 pages of report and publish 13 pages in the Washington Post in a 12-hour period.
Wow.
To give clarification on what that means, the New York Times took 4,000 pages of this report in 3 months and published 3 pages of it. So he's trying to do an unbelievable amount of work in a very short amount of time, but he knows that he needs to strike now or their window as being taken seriously as a newspaper, because back then the Washington Post was still just a family-owned newspaper. It wasn't a big deal.
Gotcha.
And it was his, you know, he felt that this really could take them to the next level. So the one thing that becomes really important in this is that when the New York Times were sued by the Supreme Court and by Richard Nixon's administration, it had said that anybody that is affiliated with Richard Nixon, or excuse me, with the New York Times' source, would also be held in contempt, meaning that they, if they got the source from the same people that New York Times got the source, they can be held in contempt of the law, which means that would send Katherine Graham and Ben Bagley to jail. So when Bob Odenkirk's character got the source, he had a hunch that it was from the same New York Times source, but he didn't know for sure. Mm-hmm. And when you do go public in a public selling in the New York trade in the New York Stock Exchange, there's a 7-day period in which the bankers can pull the evaluation, and you basically then they lose all your investors and all your money. They can only do that in the event of a catastrophic event. And they talk about in the beginning of the movie, you know, there's never going to be a catastrophic event. And, you know, again, Catherine's very timid, very scared, very nervous. She doesn't want to mess up. She doesn't feel like she deserves to be the chairman of the company. And obviously, if Ben Bagley goes ahead and publishes this in direct violation of the President of the United States administration, that kind of sounds like a catastrophic event.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So there's back and forth. All the advisors don't want him to do it. Ben's in a shouting match. It's really Ben and his journalists against everybody on the board. But at the end of the day, it's Catherine's decision to make. Again, this whole thing happens in that 7-day span from when they go public to that following week. So it's about day 3 or 4. New York Times are suspended. So they sold on a Tuesday. The New York Times was suspended from copying or printing anything until Sunday. So they need to strike within those first 4 days before New York Times and the court, you know, kind of hand out a ruling. So back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And Catherine finally has a decision and says, you know what, let's do it. Let's go publish. Let's publish this. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Fuck yeah, Catherine.
And I think it was also in that moment, it's a very big pivotal piece of history, because even and it kind of strikes a chord in today's world, is where a woman is in a superior position of power where men aren't used to it, and the men are trying mm-hmm. to talk her out of it, and this one advisor and she kind of finally turns around and finally, you know, is strong enough to say, this is not your company, this is not my father's company, this is not my husband's company, this is my company, and I will make this decision, and I say we are going to print, and now I'm going to bed. So it was the night before. She said, Ben, go fucking print it. And she went to bed. He got it all done. All the reporters got it done. They printed it the next morning. Of course, the phones are going off the hook. Immediately, Richard Nixon's administration calls them. Immediately, Richard Nixon administration, is coming after them, and they are due in court the same day that it prints. And, you know, they rule that it needs to go to the Supreme Court. So now the New York Times and the Washington Post are together. And back in that time, these two obviously butted heads. They were rivals looking to be one of the best newspapers in the, you know, entire country. And they are now on the same side against the president and his administration. And they rule in favor of the newspapers 6-3. So, of course, there's 9 Supreme Court judges, 6-3. And there was this really good quote, and it actually was a little bit emotional when one of the top journalists answered the phone. And she said, and I really don't want to get this quote wrong because it was actually really powerful, but I might be paraphrasing. But she basically said, the Supreme Court believes in the freedom of press and their right and their need to watch over the people they govern, not the governors. So pretty much to show and inform the nation and the people of the nation compared to the governors and the people that have hid a lot of these secrets.
I love that. That gives me goosebumps even just hearing it secondhand.
It was really good. It was a really good moment. And then basically what had happened was it was a big gamble, obviously, for Catherine. The investors were thinking of pulling out. And then all of a sudden you see every single newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Chicago Tribune, the St. Louis newspaper, all of these cities' newspapers are showing up. And they basically say the Washington Post has saved the country because the New York Times was suspended. Nobody else had the report. They found a way to get the report. They got it out. They did the right thing. They made the tough decision. And at the end of the day, it helped pretty much show the United States that Nixon really wasn't all that good. Because at the end of the movie, what happens is they flash forward to 2 years later to the Watergate scandal. And Mr. Wills, the security guard who finds Nixon's people rummaging through all of the reports within the entire Watergate scandal, which isn't described too much in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of cuts to black. And, you know, obviously Nixon was impeached after that. And pretty much at the end, Nixon said, I never want any Washington Post writer or photographer to ever step foot in the White House ever again.
Wow.
And I don't think that still stands true today. I didn't actually look up anything into that, you know, kind of the follow-up from that. But it really casts a negative and dark light on the Nixon administration, as well as Lyndon B. Johnson and Eisenhower and Kennedy, and says, you know, all of these presidents knew what were going on. There was so much sneakiness and deceit to the American people, and that they were still sending out all of these boys, thousands and thousands and thousands of 18-year-old boys to you know, go to war with no training and no idea of what to expect, and so many of them not coming back to their families. It was touching, and it showed the courage of Katharine Graham in a very difficult position as a woman in the 70s to go public and risk everything, risk her fortune, risk her company's fortune, risk her company in general that was in her family for so long. And then Ben Bagley as well, played by Tom Hanks as the editor-in-chief and the news editor to continue to push and show, you know, this is our duty as a newspaper and as news editors and as writers and as journalists, is to look at the reports, look at the facts, and report on them to the best of our ability. And Catherine says, you know, we don't always get it right. We're not perfect. But when we do, we're here to deliver the news. And overall, it was a very well done movie directed by Steven Spielberg, obviously an A+ cast, one of the best directors in the world. And a topic that I didn't know too much about, even as a U.S. history background major. Obviously everyone knows about Watergate, but you don't know the events kind of leading up to it. And it was eye opening. It was well done. It was a little confusing in the beginning because there was a lot of different characters that were in the beginning. It started in the '50s and the '60s, and then finally got to the week span where the majority of the movie was settled. But overall, a very, very well done movie, and I think they drove home the point they wanted to drive home. It was from the Washington Post point of view. You know, you read some things, and the New York Times had a lot more to do with it as well. Obviously, they're the ones that originally broke the story, but you know, the Washington Post continued it forward, and I think to show the light of a woman in power back in the day was something that they were striving for in this movie.
That's awesome. That sounds like a really good movie. And as a fellow history nerd/buff, sounds extra good.
Yeah,
from that perspective.
It was. And like I said, so IMDb 7.2, Rotten Tomatoes 88%. It was obviously nominated for Best Picture, and Meryl Streep, she did a really good job. You know, she played the character switch quite well. You know, you could tell she was really nervous in the beginning, a timid person, mm-hmm. just trying to have everybody like her in a very difficult and uncomfortable position, in a position that she never really thought that she'd be in after her husband's suicide. And then the switch, you know, after the conversation with her daughter and then that stern conversation she had with one of the advisors, and you're like, shit, here's Catherine. She's here to stay, and she's here to show that, you know, she's got the gall and the power to make some of the tough decisions. And in the end of the day, obviously, with all of those papers coming forward saying the Washington Post kind of saved this country by publishing this, that's going to rise their stock super, super high.
Totally.
And they just went public. So, you know, obviously their return on investment was great. And, you know, she made a really good decision. So overall, really well done. I kind of compared it to an 8.4 of The Black Swan, which was the highest rating that I've given and that role the credits has given. I couldn't get there. I thought that The Black Swan had a little bit more theatrics, maybe a little bit more just happening overall. But I thought the acting was really, really well done. I thought the cast was A+. It was a well put together movie by Spielberg. So I am going to lock in an 8.1 for Ooh. The Post from 2017, led by Tom Hanks and our own Meryl Streep.
Nice. I'm excited. This sounds like a good movie.
It was. I would recommend it. I think we kind of keep going back and forth. I would recommend it to a friend, an acquaintance. Yeah. I would recommend it to you. You know, right. a pretty good friend, I guess.
Okay.
but obviously, you know, to relate it back to something, it's difficult in a time of, you know, kind of U.S. history and a pivotal moment in just kind of the overall landscape of political agenda. I kind of took a step back, and basically the whole overview and layout of the movie is how deceitful and, you know, kind of how much lying went into all four of those presidencies and lying to the general public. And there's just so much sneakiness around it. And I guess my question to you is, would you consider yourself a sneaky or deceitful person? If yes, why? If no, what is the most sneaky or deceitful thing that you might have ever done in your life?
Okay.
Well, pretty good, right? Pretty good to tie that back.
That is. I wouldn't particularly call myself sneaky or deceitful. I think we can all do things like that at times. I think I probably did that as a child. Now at this point in my life, I enjoy honesty and transparency a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two things make life significantly better. I think that being sneaky and deceitful is something that our like current political climate still has.
I think politics probably do.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it comes on all ends. Like, I'm not saying one person is more sneaky or deceitful than the other, based on, you know, whichever party they choose to associate themselves with.
Yeah, of course.
I think everybody is in that realm of things. I'm trying to think of something sneaky or deceitful I've done.
You've had to do
like,
something.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, yeah, obviously, I'm a human being. Of course, I've fucking done it. I'm just trying to think of like a very specific time, and nothing's really coming to mind. I'm just
That's good.
Trying to think of something like.
Just so you know, listeners, that Tina's too really painting herself in a good light right now, and not all of you know her as well as I do, and she's a good person, but she's not like an angel floating
no,
above all of us.
No, I'm definitely not. No, wait, but you know what I just remembered? Remember when that like prank war was happening on our floor freshman year?
And of course, we lost. It was terrible.
Yeah. Some other girls on our floor decided to put shrimp in... God, I can't even say that with a straight face. They put shrimp in Calpin and his roommate's pillowcases and in their fan, I believe.
That was the worst part. They sprayed shrimp juice in an oscillating fan. And so we thought we found everything, but it was just continuing to smell like fucking shrimp, like we were fucking living in the goddamn rivers and swamps of Mississippi. and it was just in our fan. We had lost. We did the whole thing where we tried to like tie a bucket to their ceiling, and when they opened the door, water would pour out.
I was a part of that part, and they were like, Tina.
Yeah, we definitely lost. I'm trying to think what else. I couldn't even really remember what else we did, but yeah, that was I guess that wasn't really sneaky. That was more of just that like that was just a prank war.
People up. Yeah, no, it's not. I just randomly thought about that. sneaky and deceitful. I mean, I definitely lied to my parents plenty of times. Sorry, Mom and Dad. oh, okay, perfect. I have one. So this one time I blacked out. And I fell and I hit my head and I got a pretty bad concussion. Bad enough that I had to withdraw from, I think, like three of my classes, spring semester, senior year. Yeah.
Is this the same concussion story you told a couple episodes back?
Probably, but this is a different
spin on it. Yeah,
a different spin. So I told my parents that I was at this event on campus and I like was doing this like relay balloon race thing, and someone knocked a balloon or ball out from under me and I fell and I hit my head, and they like believed it, I guess. I don't really know. They didn't question it when I told them that. So this whole time they're thinking that that's what happened. And then so that happened in February, and that was my story. And then come June, I'm still having issues. I was in physical, occupational, vestibular, and speech therapy.
Because of this concussion?
Yes, and I still have post-concussion syndrome at this point in time. Which
in your light right now?
Yes, right now. I get terrible migraines.
Oh my
sometimes
God.
My speech is slow, and sometimes like my mental processing is slow. So if I sound slow when I talk occasionally, that's probably why.
Wait, what did you hit your head on? Did you say a bathtub?
No, a tile bathroom floor in a house that was built in like the 1980s in Westchester. So what happened was I was blackout drunk and decided that I wanted some privacy as I was going to throw up. Well, I lost all rights to privacy that evening. So I closed the door and I fell and I hit my head, and my friend like pulls me up off the floor and my eyes are like shaking back and forth. Head, and then I immediately vomited, which makes sense because like I was really drunk, so obviously I'm gonna vomit, but also I hit my head pretty hard. Anyway, so a bunch of things happened. I didn't find out that I had a concussion until like 3 days later. So I told my parents that story about doing this relay race thing, and fast forward then to June, which is February, March, April, May, like 4 months later. My parents.
That was the concussion math.
That was concussion math. I don't do fast math. I've never done fast math.
Sorry, go ahead.
So there I am. I'm asleep in my bed. It's like, it's a Saturday, and my parents are having a graduation party for me. And my mom walks upstairs and drops a letter on my bed. And says, your father would like to speak to you. And I picked up the letter and I was like, oh, fuck. So I lost feeling in part of my arm from this concussion.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like into like my fingertips and stuff. So I had to get this thing called not an EKG, maybe an EMG, where what they do is they take little pins and just like poke them in you at different spots and like register your nerve response. So I had to do that to like see if I had any permanent nerve damage or whatever. So this doctor, when I'm there, asks me to like recount my evening, what happened, how it happened, what sort of symptoms I was feeling now, yada, yada, yada. And this dude sends a fucking one page no, like single spaced recount of my night to my parents' house, because that's where I had the bills go for my medical shit. And I was like, oh shit. So I'm sitting there reading it. And again, it's the day of my graduation party. So it's like impeccable timing, honestly.
That's kind of ironic.
Isn't it? Right? So I'm sitting there and I'm reading this. I'm like barely awake. It's like 8 a.m. and my dad got the mail the next day. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so fucked. And I went downstairs and I looked at him and he just shook his head and he said, you know, I'm not actually mad at you. I'm just really disappointed that you lied.
No, that's the worst line.
That's the worst possible thing that I could have ever heard. And I felt immensely guilty. I guess I maybe still do, like, a little bit. But, like, it was so long ago at this point. And, yeah, so I would say that's the most recent deceitful thing that I have done.
That's a good story.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry you went through all of those things. I did. I knew that. I knew the concussion story, obviously, but I didn't know you lost feeling and your eyes were down your throat and you still can't do math.
I still can't. I never. Let's be real. I could never do math. What about you?
Yeah, so I actually don't find myself very sneaky or deceitful. I've actually am honest to a fault that gets me in trouble sometimes.
Same.
You know, I do. I like to, like, I don't understand social norms sometimes, honest to God. Like, I'd like to set boundaries and conversations because I've gotten myself in trouble in the past, like, trying to just assume that people are on the same page and whatever notion of life that is. And so I have come to, like, lay some things out, like, all right, this is how this is going to go. Mm-hmm. This is how I'm feeling. And sometimes that kind of, you know, backfires nowadays as well. So I don't really know what to do in certain situations. I don't understand social norms or cues or relationships or friendships. But pretty much I'm an honest person to a fault. However, in my time, there was some deceit that I did. I actually don't even know if my mother knows this. I really hope she doesn't listen to this episode. But this was back in high school. So it's back in high school. So it's not a big deal. But so back in high school, I want to say maybe 9th and 10th grade, maybe 11th grade, but mostly 9th and 10th grade. I was a pretty big fucking idiot. And one of those, like, annoying ass little kids that just, like, thought he was hot shit and funny, like being a class clown and disrupting shit. So I would get after school detention a lot. So, like, just for, like, literally acting out in class, like I was fucking 7 years old or having my phone in study hall, whatever the case may be. You know, I had gotten a lot of after school detentions. Like, I was probably like two a week, one to two a week. And so I always told my parents that I was doing after school activities, whether that was certain academic clubs or intramurals or working out. I joined the
marching band.
Yeah, just an abundance of lies. And so every time you get an after school detention, they mail a letter home. So I had to get the mail and steal the mail all the time. And somehow I always beat, and like if I wasn't going to beat my parents home, I had a buddy that lived across the street up on this big hill, and I would pay him like $2 to come down and steal my mail for me. But my dumbass, for whatever reason, would have all these letters, and I had like a stack of like 20 to 30 of them.
Did you keep them?
I didn't throw them away. I hid them under my bed because
idiot.
I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't want to put them in the trash can. I don't know. I was so fucking dumb. And there was one very ridiculous story that I got in trouble for. I was hanging out after school, and this girl that I kind of liked, we wanted to hang out, and I couldn't take her to my place. My parents' place. I couldn't go back to her place. So we went to the tennis courts on school property and started fooling around a little bit. And we got caught by the hall monitor.
You had a hall monitor?
Like an outdoor, like a monitor. There was just somebody walking around. And he took us to the vice principal's office.
Oh, no.
And thankfully, they only thought we were making out when, yeah, that's all we were doing. So I got back and they're like, okay, you can't be doing this. Like, you need to call your dad to pick you up. You're going to have after school detention for this. Like, I had just gotten out of after school detention for something else. And so I made up some lie. My dad picked me up, whatever. But then I want to say like a year later, like a year after, like I finally had grown up and, you know, was quick to acting a fool. And my dad was cleaning out my entire room because we were getting a new bed or a new mattress. And he just comes outside and just has this big stack of papers that it's just all the dates and times of not only the after school detention that I had, but the times that meant that I stole the mail, the times that meant that I lied to them about what I was doing. They realized I wasn't working out or practicing baseball or doing anything academic. I was sitting in after school detention. for, you know, at least 20 to 25 times. So that is the most deceitful and lying I've ever been. Since then, it doesn't make sense for me to lie. I don't really ever find it a situation. Even like when people are like, shut up, like just fucking lie and just be nice. I'm like, what? I don't like his hat. I think she's stupid. She should grow up. Like, so there's things in social norms and cues that maybe I need to pick on a little bit better. But in terms of being sneaky and deceitful, that was my 12 month span of that.
That's hilarious. And I can also speak to Calpin's very brutally honest truth. The other day I asked him for his opinion on whether I should do a stud or a hoop for my nose ring. And he said neither. And he said he does not like nose piercings.
I said, can I say neither?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you can.
Which is an honest question. Can I say neither? Because no, if I can, I fucking take it out.
I was looking for an honest opinion, and I absolutely got it. So if you ever need an honest opinion, Calpin is your go-to guy.
It's just funny because everybody – it's so funny because people take so much – people take so much stock in like what everyone else thinks and says about everybody thinks something different. Like, I promise you that there are multiple people that you probably showed the picture to or just in your life that love hoop nose rings.
Absolutely.
They're heinous to me. I hate them.
And that's okay. I have a little baby stud in now.
There was somebody. Yeah, I hate that as well. There was somebody. There was somebody that I was hooking up with a couple of years ago. And, like, it was a potential to, like – this is so ridiculous. Superficial, ridiculous. But there was like a point where it was like, all right, we're crossing the bridge now of like having a conversation of what we're going to do. And she always had this nose ring in, and I hated it so fucking much. And like, she never asked me, because if she did ask me, I would have told her. But one of the top three reasons, and when I say top three, like one of the top one reasons that I didn't want to continue was because her nose ring freaked me out.
Was it a hoop or a stud?
It was a hoop, and it was like kind of like crusty, and
ew.
I just gross. Didn't.
You gotta clean that shit.
That's mean. I'm sorry, but no, I don't like it. So yeah, so I will always give an opinion, even in a, you know, time I maybe should just shut up. But that's me, uncensored, unfiltered.
As you wish.
So that was the post 8.1. As I said, Tina, what did you get into?
Okay, I got into a movie that is actually a play, so it was a little bit different than what I had been used to watching. It's always interesting when a play is adapted to film, vice versa. But I watched August Osage County from 2014.
I've never heard of
it. Wow. Well, so Meryl Streep was actually nominated for Best Performance.
Shocker.
For the Oscars. Best Performance by an Actress in a Musical Picture for the Golden Globes. The SAG Awards, Screen Guild Actors Awards. She was nominated for an Outstanding Performance by a Female Actor in a Leading Role. And the entire cast was actually nominated for Outstanding Performance by a Cast in a Motion Picture. And Julia Roberts actually got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for the Oscars, for the Golden Globes, and for the Screen Guild Actors Awards. Or the Screen Actors Guild Awards. My bad.
It's called SAG Awards.
The SAG Awards.
S-A-G. Damn concussion. My God.
So the cast was actually pretty loaded. Abigail Breslin, Chris Cooper, Benedict Cumberbatch, Juliette Lewis, Margot Martindale, Ewan McGregor. Is that how you say his name? Ewan?
Ewan.
Ewan, thanks. Damn, can't touch him. Julia Roberts, Sam Shepard, Meryl Streep, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, we get it.
Yeah, so it was from 2013 or 14, I forget.
You said 14, so we'll go 14.
We'll go 14. But yeah, so it is about a family. Meryl Streep plays the matriarch of the family. Her name is Violet Weston in it, and she is married to a man named Beverly Weston. And he's the patriarch obviously of a family, and he's a semi-famous poet and an academic, and he's only actually in the very beginning of the play. So he's there speaking, and in this opening scene, he is hiring a housekeeper named Jonna. And as he's hiring her, Meryl Streep rolls in, Violet, and Violet is clearly out of her fucking mind. And that is because she is addicted to pills. So she's extremely high, and she looks at her, and the housekeeper, Jonna, is Native American, and she looks at her and she goes, "Are you Indian?" Like, in this horrid voice, and like, oh my god. The character she plays is just super, super hard to watch and listen to. She is like ice. She goes on these violent, drug-induced rants, and she's just out of control. So anyways, the whole premise of the movie is Beverly, her husband, disappears for a few days. And he's an alcoholic, so she just kind of assumes that he goes out on a bender. But they actually end up finding him dead. He committed suicide. Ironically, you just...
Yeah, that's weird.
Meryl Streep is playing a widow of men who commit suicide. But yeah, so he kills himself, he drowns himself, just like his favorite poets. So the whole movie sort of starts around that, and it's just like basically showing and outlining the entire family's relationship. Most of the movie takes place at their house, so they don't really go anywhere, but there's just like a lot of different scenes, a lot of people coming in and out. The other thing about Violet Weston, Meryl Streep's character, is she has mouth cancer. So she's in a lot of pain often, and the doctor like prescribes her all of these pills, which makes her problem even worse. And she's just she's a terrible fucking human being, like terrible. Like, she, like, her one daughter comes home and she's like, "You know, the reason that your father killed himself is because you moved away." And she said it like that. Yeah, she is callous. And you find out that she was abused and beaten by her mother's various boyfriends as she was growing up. She cuts her daughters out of her husband's will, keeps all the money for herself. And at the end of the movie, she actually reveals that she knew what he was doing when he left to kill himself. And she didn't do anything about it.
So you mean it was all a ploy to get money?
Yeah, like, kind of it was. But she also was just, like, so fucked up on pills that she just didn't care. So, like, she has terrible relationships with all of her daughters and with the rest of the family. And specifically with her daughter, Barbara, who is Julia Roberts in the movie. And she lives in Colorado. She lives there with her daughter, Jean, and her husband, Bill. Then you find out partway through that Bill and Barbara are separated. But they are, like, pretending that they're together when she goes out, when they all three of them go out to Osage County. And she's, like, witty and funny, but she's also, like, angry. They're all angry. Everybody in this movie is just fucking angry, and they all hate each other in some way. But she is cynical, and she and her mother are super similar in the sense that they're cynical in that kind of way. And her husband, Bill, ends up having an affair with somebody, and she's younger than him. And, you know, it's like this whole big thing. And their daughter, Jean, is 14 years old, and she, like, smokes cigarettes. And Barbara's like, "You just, you know, you don't yell at Jean for doing that," to Bill, she's saying. Like, "You don't yell at Jean for doing that. You think it makes her cool," and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, "You're a shit father," that sort of thing. And then there's this, like, weird scene in the movie where her aunt, Jean's aunt, so Barbara's sister, named Karen, it's her youngest sister, is engaged to this man, Steve. Well, Steve's like this weird creepy dude, and he's like hanging out with Jean at like 2 a.m. And they're outside together, like, smoking pot. And he's, like, trying to kiss her. So, I know, it's fucking weird. So, Jonna, the housekeeper, actually, like, runs outside and starts nailing him with a shovel. And, like, a metal shovel. Not, like, a little plastic, just, like, a straight-up metal-ass shovel. And everyone's like, oh, my God, what the fuck's happening? And everyone's, like, running outside, causing a scene. And then, like, Karen and Steve leave because Steve just molested her, his, like, future niece. But Karen is the youngest sister, and she's just, like, kind of living in her own little world. She's in Karen's world. And, you know, she just wants a fairy tale and has always been interested in that kind of lifestyle. And she seems pretty detached and, like, delusional. She's definitely, like, dismissive of what her parents have done and, like, of, you know, she's living in Karen's world, and that's what it's like. And then there's a middle sister, Ivy, and Ivy's the only one that has stayed in the area since growing up, and she isn't, her mom and her aunt make fun of her in the beginning. They're like, you look like a lesbian, you dress like a lesbian, no man's ever gonna want you, like, blah, blah, blah. And Ivy, like, clearly takes that to heart, but then you find out she is dating her cousin.
She's dating a woman cousin?
No, male cousin.
Oh, that's weird.
She is, like, with him, and it's her first cousin. It's her Aunt Maddie Faye's son, little Charles.
And she's fucking her cousin.
She's fucking her cousin.
Wow.
And then the plot thickens.
The plot thickens?
The plot thickens. Guess what?
She's pregnant with an ancestral child.
No. Actually, so that's interesting that you say that, because when her sisters find out, they're like, dude, that's fucked up. You can't have kids. And she's like, well, I already can. I had a hysterectomy. I had cervical cancer or something. And she was like, and they were all like, what the fuck? Why didn't you tell us? And she was like, I don't feel connected to any of you. And it was like this whole big thing. So she cannot have kids. But actually, little Charles is her half-brother.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And none of them know that until Aunt Maddie Faye says something. Because she finds out that little Charles and Ivy are a thing. They want to run away to New York together. So she says to Barbara, you need to stop this shit. And Barbara's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? And then that's when she does say to Barbara, like, little Charles is your half-brother. Yeah, I know.
That's gross.
I know. I was like, ooh, I feel skeevy right now. So, ironically, though, Violet knew this whole time. So she says something, like, pretty mean to Ivy, and she's like, what? Little Charles is your brother.
That's so
and
weird.
And Ivy just, like, starts crying and loses her shit, as one probably would.
I mean, it's a weird line, though. Like, oh, all right, I'm okay with fucking my first cousin, but you're going to tell me half-brother? That's it. Lines crossed. That's fucked up.
Right. It's super weird.
I feel like it'd be less weird.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like if it was just a half brother and not a first cousin, that's less weird, right? Because it's not really, like, actual relation, right?
Half brother?
You're saying step brother?
No, half brother. Like, they share the same dad.
Okay, yeah, never mind. I took it back.
Yeah, I was like, no. Yeah, so the entire movie is just, like, based around the family's lies, the family's dysfunction, you know, like, the nastiness of it all. I will say everybody in the movie was fucking incredible. The acting, amazing. One of my favorite lines, I actually wrote this quote down so I would not botch it.
Fuck, should have done that.
I know, you should have. It's fine. Was Julia Roberts, Barbara. I keep going back and forth. I need to stop doing that. I need to stick with one or the other. Barbara says to her daughter, Jean, listen to me. Die after me, all right? I don't care what else you do, where you go, how you screw up your life. Just survive. Outlive me, please. And I was like, fuck, like this whole thing is so cynical. Like the entire movie was just super cynical. And like, again, like I'm saying, it was super well done. Amazing performances. Meryl Streep knocked it out of the fucking park. She was incredible playing this addict. It was great. If I were rating the movie just on acting, probably pretty high.
Okay.
IMDb gave it a 7.2. Rotten Tomatoes, 66%.
Okay.
Me,
6.2.
It was good.
Too much dysfunction?
So much dysfunction. It was like an unbelievable amount of dysfunction. I think that was a stretch for me. I couldn't specifically relate to that amount of dysfunction in terms of like once they threw the siblings in there, like, or the like half brother sister fucking each other thing, and you know, it was just like meh. It was definitely still relatable. There's somebody in my life that I'm very close to who is an addict, so seeing certain scenes like that was like really real. Right. And I think that too might have been something that, like, because that was so real to me that I was like, I like just don't want to see this, because I can kind of feel myself having to like relive those certain instances and conversations with somebody who was just like so out of it and so messed up from being high. But yeah, 6.2 overall. Maybe if I were not, like, if I were in a better mood, I might have liked it more. But, like, again, it was just one of those things where, like, it's kind of slow moving. There's no specific plot. It's mostly just about characters, which is cool. And I'm into that, but I just was not into it when I watched it.
That's fair. I mean, I think every movie needs to match a certain mood, you know what I mean, to, yeah, you know, really knock it out of the park. It sounds like we can both agree that Meryl Streep's a phenomenal actress.
She's absolutely incredible. Everything she does. I think, honestly, so have you seen Mamma Mia?
No.
Okay. Have you seen Big Little Lies?
Not when she was in it.
Okay. So I think she does an amazing job of playing, like, ice characters. Like, I think she's so good at that. Like, kind of mean people. Like, I think, I don't know what it is.
You tweeted it and someone came at you, didn't they?
Yeah, someone did come at me. They were like, Jane Adler, Julia, listing all these fucking characters that she was like a good person. I was like, leave me the fuck alone. I didn't even answer that. I was like, you don't get any of my energy. I don't know you. Yeah, so Big Little Lies, if you have not seen it, 10 out of 10 would recommend, especially this past season. So you need to watch that, Calpin.
On my list.
Good. But yeah, so I wanted to talk about that quote, honestly, about life, where she says, I don't care what else you do, where you go, how you screw up your life, just survive. What do you think about that?
So that's a mother telling a daughter that.
Yes, her 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little young for that advice, but
fair enough. Even I think now, if I get that advice, I'm like, well, fuck you, you cynical dick.
I don't know, though. Like, I mean, I think I could try to appreciate it from a standpoint of, especially in that setting, you know, there's so much dysfunction and really it just seems like a lot of hatred towards each other. It doesn't seem like the one good thing that is going for her, which is her daughter, that she could ever handle losing completely. So I think the message, at least from what I took from it, was go out, do what you got to do, you know, fuck it up in whatever way you need to fuck it up with, but just survive so that you could, you know, still be here, you know, for me, you know, be here with me so that I don't have to go through the turmoil of losing you, pretty much, is kind of what I took away from it. Again, I think a little bit young, but you see it so many times and you hear it so many times where a parent should never have to bury their son or daughter, you know, because I can't imagine. I mean, obviously we don't have children, so, you know, but you do have people close to you. You have, you know, even my dog, for instance, tonight she was super sick and I literally had like heart palpitations that, you know, your mind jumps to the worst thing possible and you can't imagine losing them. And I think that goes with, you know, whether you have a dog, whether you have a best friend, whether you have a kid that, you know, you babysit, or, you know, whatever it is, people in your life that you don't believe should leave your side until you are also leaving this great world, then, you know, you can at least appreciate a mom sentiment in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? I like that interpretation of it. My friend has a son and he will be 2 in April. And I don't know, like, he's just like the coolest kid in the entire world. Absolutely love him. Would jump in front of like a train. Take a grenade. What's that song?
I take a grenade for you. That's all I got.
All right. Thank you for that. Yeah. No, it's this like crazy feeling when you like finally realize like that you love other people, that you, like, in such a strong way that you would do things like that for them. Like, it's the end all be all type thing. And I can't even imagine what that's like as a parent.
Imagine having a kid right now.
Oh, hell no. Definitely not. You should see that, like, my room's a mess right now. If I had a... No?
No.
I mean, like, that's not the only thing that is, like, a mess in my life.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird how, like, I said, could you imagine having a kid? And you went, no, can you see my room, how messy it is? Like, I think, Tina, there's a lot more things that would be, like...
So many more things, but that's, like, the most significant thing because it's, like, immediately in my face right now. No, I...
Can you imagine having a child? No, I haven't made my bed yet, Ryan.
Oh my god, do you make your bed?
Fuck no, I don't make my bed.
No, okay, thank you, me either.
I'm not from the military.
I heard that if you make your bed every
day. Oh, here we go. I had this fucking video. I got this video in sales training like 3 years ago. Like, come to work, make your bed, do one thing right so that you can continue to have a show.
Fuck that. There's no way there's scientific proof behind that. There's no possible way. I don't believe it for a second.
I would never make my bed because I don't ever want to leave it because I want to be in it forever.
Exactly. And I know I'm just going to get back in it and I'm going to make like my sheets a mess and like roll around while I sleep.
We don't need your sleep pattern, Sina. We get it. Your bed's messy. We don't need to understand that you drool and you roll around in your sleep.
Okay, so. Well, I definitely don't drool.
I drool.
You.
I'm not a snorer, but I drool.
Oh, you're not a snorer?
No, but I drool.
Oh, thank God. Okay, yeah, no, me either. I don't know. What if you ended up with a snorer? What if you got married and you found, well.
I had a snorer.
Oh, you do.
Yeah, I've laid with a snorer before. Such a weird way to say it. Yeah, it's terrible. A lot of times I would like. Well, I'm a pretty deep sleeper. So, like, as long as I fall asleep before fucking Count Dracula comes and Snorlax is, like, in my face, then I'm okay. Like, I won't ever be woken up by it.
Right.
But God forbid that, you know, I'm up late or, you know, the person next to me is snoring before I fall asleep. I've thought about, you know, putting a pillow over those people's heads and letting it in their life.
So, I'm a super light sleeper, and one of my roommates used to snore a lot, and it's so fucking loud.
Like in a different room?
No, we shared a room. We had bunk beds. So
you had bunk beds?
We had bunk beds. So I would like shake. I was the bottom bunk. Sorry.
When did you have bunk beds?
When
you were like 21 years old?
Yeah, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super weird.
Yeah.
It'd be weird if you were top bunk, I think.
Yeah, no, I was the bottom bunk. And I had a double bed, though. So it was like one of those bunk beds where it's like a double and then a twin on top.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we had those bunk beds. And when she would snore, I would just like shake the bunk bed. I'd be like, yo, yeah. Shh. I'd be like.
I probably got her.
Huh?
That probably got her. 50-year-old smoking man. Yow!
Now she'd be like, what? And I'd be like, you're snoring. Roll over. But yeah.
How did we get there?
I don't really remember. You asked me if I could imagine having a kid right now.
Oh, we went down the path of your bed was messy. Right. Guys, you should see it. So you guys can't see it, but I can see it. So she has one curtain, and her windows looks like it's half broken. She has no pillowcase on her pillow. She's got a bowl of soup that is dumped out on the floor, which she's kind of playing with her toes right now. Looks like she's got a candle lit, but it's about to kind of – the wax is about to boil over. Looks like she has a child in those sheets, just kind of rolling around. I can't really tell what's going on.
God, I think the worst thing that you just said was soup and feet.
Mm.
I don't like feet, and I don't like soup.
Oh, I fucking hate feet.
Feet are
– I'm terrified of feet.
Same. If someone puts their foot near me, and it's, God forbid, if it's fucking bare.
Oh, I'm so
throw a goddamn fit.
Oh, I throw a fit and a half. I'm out here breaking toes. I'm like the fucking nutcracker of fucking toes. If it's near me. Okay, let's wrap this up. We've really gone off on a tangent. So what'd you give a 6.2?
6.2, August Osage County. If you're super into...
That's the name of the movie, August Osage County?
Yeah, it's August : Osage County. Because it's August in Osage County when it's happening. And it's hot as fuck there.
Okay, I got it. Don't yell at me.
Anyways, definitely suggest it if you are a theater person, are very into character development and great acting. The plot just didn't really do it for me.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, like I said, the comparisons of Meryl Streep, you know, obviously who this episode is focused in on, is that she's a really good actor. 8.1 for The Post, 6.2 for The August of Sage Cooking, and I think that wraps up Meryl Streep's episode of Roll the Credits. Of course, if you know you're just joining us now, we wrap up every single episode with a good news story of the week. Obviously, there's a lot of negativity out there. Am I okay?
I don't think so.
There's a lot of negativity out there, a lot of scare, you know, kind of there's a lot of people scared. I now have a concussion and I can't speak. This is the only thing I'm good at. So a lot of people scared of there, obviously, with the virus and many other things going on in today's world. So we always like to bring a good story to everybody to wrap up the episode. So I had seen a video of a children's hospital. It was not in the United States. It was outside of this country, I believe. But this guy comes in and he paints the floors and the walls to look like an aquarium. So he does a really, really good job of – like he's a really fantastic artist and painter. And he comes in and, you know, makes it look like the floor is like glass, but there's like whales or turtles coming up and there's fish on the walls and even on the ceilings, he does it as well. So it's as if they're walking through an aquarium themselves, and it really puts a smile on the kids' faces, which I thought was really neat and special.
I dig that.
Good. I'm glad you dig that. Thank you for that sentiment of digging my story.
Go on. It was a really nice one, and it made my heart warm.
It's warmer than your soup on your floor.
It indeed is. All right, mine is not specifically a news story, but it is about one of my favorite Instagram accounts, at the Shirley Temple King. Have you seen?
Oh, him? Yeah, this kid's fucking good.
He's amazing.
Could use a little bit more ginger ale.
Just a little bit more grenadine.
Yeah, we're not good at it, so we should probably stop.
We should stop.
Oh, Jesus Christ. No.
I'm
going to
joke again. I had a banana with some peanut butter before doing this, which was a mistake because peanut butter just really gets in. Anyways. All right. Back to the Shirley Temple King.
Shirley Temple King, please, for the love of God, tell me what you like about him.
He's a six-year-old. His name is Leo Kelly, and he reviews Shirley Temples. This kid goes fucking everywhere. I swear to God, I don't know how he travels more than I do, but he does. And
do you travel?
I do. Thank you.
I saw the video. He was with Portnoy.
Yes, he was with Dave Portnoy. He does pizza reviews. And anyway, so he rates these Shirley Temples that he has on a scale of 1 to 9.5, because he says there's no such thing as a perfect Shirley Temple.
I love that about
it. I love it too. So He'll sit there, he'll do this review, he'll take a sip, and he makes these great facial expressions. And he'll be like, all right, so it has three cherries. I like the fact that this is a metal straw. And look, it's in a real glass. I don't usually get these. And anyways, he goes on and on. Definitely check out the account. It's very heartwarming. It's adorable. It's funny. And he knows the scale. That's the scale that we like to have on our show. So if you're wondering how we do our ratings, we follow Leo Kelly.
I dig it.
Thanks, Scout.
I dig it. No, very good. Yeah, I've definitely seen the little shit around. He's been doing really good. No, he is. He's actually adorable. He's really cute. I watched the full video with Portnoy, and he does really good.
Just came out of my nose.
He does a really good job. He was actually on Ellen as well. I've seen him in a few public appearances. He's adorable. So that is the good news story of the week for Roll the Credits. And at the end of every episode, we of course see who we're going to be tuning into next week. We've had a couple of girls, women in a row now, so maybe we'll get back on the guy train. I know coming up soon in a couple of weeks, is going to be a special episode. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be something, you know, similar, but a little bit different than what we've been doing the last, about a month and a half now. So this will be our 7th episode, as I mentioned. So we're super excited. Again, very, very, before I spin the wheel here, we're very thankful for you guys tuning in, listening. Our listeners have been going up every single day. We're really appreciative. Follow us on social media. Those accounts have been, you know, continuing to grow slowly as well. We've been, of course, as we mentioned, in the charts in Germany, United States, Japan, Switzerland. So we're really happy that we're starting to be listened to around the world. And hopefully you guys can, you know, just find some relatable things to tune into and laugh about, laugh at us, if you will, because it's definitely easy to do that as well. So we really do appreciate all the support as we're just getting going here. So, Tina, let's see what we got next week.
Woo.
All right.
Hopefully next week I don't choke on anything. Or
I'm sure you will.
Not come out of my nose.
We are going to. So we were between two of my favorites. Not that we didn't get a good one, we did, but just so you know, we were between Jennifer Aniston and Matthew McConaughey.
Oh.
And we landed on David Spade.
Oh.
She's so upset. No, David Spade, of course, known from the Grown Ups franchise as Joe Dirt. He's in Adam Sandler's posse, a very funny comedian. And he has a lot of movies out there that he has been in. Benchwarmers, of course.
As tall as David Spade.
Benchwarmers, of course. I think you're as tall as David Spade. Really appreciate you throwing that out there. If God forbid he ever wanted to come on the show, you have now called our next guest short.
What's
very short.
Being short.
And you also said, oh, God, David.
Well, I mean, if we're in between Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Aniston, and then we plan on...
How do you think he feels? He's probably been getting that his whole goddamn career.
Probably.
Oh, but Jennifer on the left, Matthew on the right. Oh, David, please get out of the shot, out of the way. You're in the way. So we've rambled. We've done a lot of rambling tonight, and I appreciate you guys tuning in. As you know, the three of you that have stuck this far in the recording, I appreciate you. Mom, Dad, and Tina's mother, thank you. But if you have stuck with us this far, we do really appreciate it. This has been another episode of Roll the Credits. This was Meryl Streep. We watched some really good movie with some phenomenal acting and some good conversation. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Continue to listen. Continue to follow along. Reach out to us. Shoot us an email. Shoot us a direct message if you want to get on here. We're going to be obviously approaching the summer months soon. Schedules get a little bit crazier, and I'm sure, you know, we'll need some guest co-hosts and things like that. So thanks so much, guys. I'm Ryan.
I'm Tina.
And we'll see you guys next week. Toodaloo. Ellie, talk soon. Oh, dear God.